begin whenever you wish.
Thank you. I am Kristen Paulding on behalf of the appellant Jeffrey Carr in this matter. We are here today asking the court to reverse the decision of the trial court and dismiss the five indictments that Mr. Carr was ultimately found guilty of. Conspiracy to commit abduction, conspiracy to commit sex trafficking, abduction, and the final one was use of a firearm in the commission of that abduction. I'd like to start by focusing on the sex trafficking charge.
Ms. Pauling, do you agree that the evidence is sufficient to establish that at the requisite time at the hotel, all of these offenses occurred? The question is simply whether the evidence establishes that your client was involved in them, or is it different than that?
I do believe that you have the abduction, sufficient evidence that Mr. Ray Ray or Alonzo McClenney would have sufficient evidence to have committed abduction by pointing the gun and forcing her back to the hotel. I think the question becomes whether or not my client had the requisite intent to participate in those activities when he went over to the hotel with the other men. I think the interesting part about this case is that when the sex trafficking statute was enacted, roughly 4 or 5 months before this offense occurred, we have to look at what was the intent of the statute. Obviously, I think there is good intent to make sure that men, women, and children are not being forced into situations of prostitution for the benefit of pimps or what have you. But that's not what we have here. When Mr. Carr comes into this situation, he barely knows Ms. Scarborough, maybe for 5 or 6 days. When Ms. Scarborough comes up to the Hampton Roads area, she is a woman who has been abusing heroin for over 6 years. She's been prostituting on her own. She's homeless, having been kicked out of her father's home.
But even if she is a veteran of the trade, if he comes in, if someone were to come in and be an enforcer for a pre-existing pimp, that would satisfy the elements of the statute, correct?
Your
argument is not the concept. It's the evidence doesn't establish that he played that role.
I agree, but I also don't feel that Mr. McQuitty was a pimp. In this case, specifically on page 246 on the record, I had asked Ms. Scarborough, you were comfortable giving all of your money to Justin McQuitty in the hopes that the two of you would break free from this lifestyle and be able to kind of go off on your own. It was very clear that Mr. McQuitty was her love interest. They had had relations the first time they met. They were having a romantic relationship, and even in the week that had transpired. And she was happy to provide that money to him. It was symbiotic. He was providing her heroin, which she was addicted to and needed, but he was also creating an environment for the two of them to be together with the hopes that they would run off and do something else. And after the incident at the second hotel, when she ran away for one day, she ultimately came back to be with him, and that's when the arrest happened. So I don't see him as a pimp. I see them as using each other. What you have is a situation where you have almost 7 or 8 people who are spending a week bouncing around from hotel to hotel. They're using drugs. Heroin, Mr. Carr was using marijuana. I think there was some alcohol there. Miss Scarborough is having prostitution appointments. There's another woman there. There's some partying. When she leaves the Red Roof Inn on that night, she has every chance in the world to use whatever money she has to call a cab, to call a friend, or to leave. She simply decides, I'm going to walk next door because I want some peace and quiet. They're having
If McQuitty wasn't a pimp, how would you describe him? Just a boyfriend?
Yes. And an
just
addict.
Just a boyfriend?
Yes, sir. In fact, in that week that they started hooking up, they were using each other. She was making the money by prostituting. He was getting the heroin. She needed the heroin. He needed the money. Where does Mr. Carr come into all of this?
Let's go. I think it's at the America's Best Value, I believe, is the
the
hotel at issue. While she is being confronted and accused of working for other pimps, which suggests that somebody in the room thinks that they're her pimp, there's this back and forth. She's clearly, you've conceded, she gets abducted at gunpoint during this encounter. Your client is walking back and forth behind, appears to be exhorting. I believe the exact quote she gives is, you're lying, that he says, you're lying about her, slam dunk on her, which she says means pistol whip her. If he did say that, and I think we have to conclude from the posture we're in that he did in fact say that, isn't that more than just being a bystander? the abduction?
I would argue the abduction had not happened at that point. So what happens, and this is the whole issue with the conspiracy, is they go over to the hotel. Ms. Scarborough had seen Brandon Bethel and Justin McQuitty earlier in that day. She had used some heroin with them. She had called Tasha about clothes. She had called Tasha about, hey, can Justin come over and bring some food to this hotel, the America's Best Value Inn. So she's not hiding. They know she's there. She's calling for them to come on over. When they all walk over there, this is nothing different than what they've been doing for the last week. We drive to this hotel in Chesapeake, this one in Virginia Beach, this one in Norfolk.
They go over there with the express purpose of bringing her back. She does not want to go back. Is that fair to say?
I disagree. When they go over there, Justin and her initially have an argument. Remember, they're the only two in the group in some type of sexual relationship.
At some point, she does not want to go back, and they basically say, you're coming back with us, and they do that with a gun.
Ray Ray says that.
Right. What about a concert of action?
Well, I think with a concert of action, you have to look at, was there that criminal enterprise to begin with? So it talked in Ralston, in which I quoted in my brief, if two people decide to have a meeting and meet, there's concert of action. However, if one of the parties commits a criminal act during the meeting, the other is not criminally liable. We have Ray Ray going into that room. You have a conversation or an argument taking place for 5 or 10 minutes. That gun does not come out until challenged by Ms. Scarborough. So they don't bust into that door.
Except we have your client, light most favorable to cometh, exhorting that the gun to be used to harm her. The gun then is placed essentially to her head. I think in this case, both literally and figuratively, would be an appropriate description. And then your client assists in the transport of her back, both walking behind her and carrying her bags. So we have, before the gun is pushed to his head, he is encouraging. He accuses her of lying about not working for another pimp. I think from context, that's what the you're lying is about. He exhorts the gun to be used against her in a violent way. The gun is then used against her, not in that particular violent way, but I think we would all agree in a violent way. And then he assists in transporting her back to where she is being taken by her pimp.
I think there's confusion about the transporting back, because specifically in the record, when I asked Ms. Scarborough who picked up your bags, she says, I didn't really remember. I wasn't really paying attention to that. So there's no question that Mr. Carr did walk back with the group, but that was the next course of action. He wasn't staying at that particular hotel.
Who was Bundles?
Bundles is Mr. Carr.
Well, there's a question in the record asked who was carrying the bags, and somebody says Bundles, and she says Bundles.
I agree. At one point, she does. And then at another point on cross-examination, I tried to clarify, because there was some different testimony at the preliminary hearing about, well, who was packing them up, who was really handling your bags, and that's where she became unclear about those things.
But there's a difference between packing and carrying, and she describes Bundles being, I think, behind her carrying the bags, with somebody else also carrying bags, and then one person's in front of her, and they've kind of got her surrounded as they cross over, I guess, back to the Red Roof.
Yes, and there's no doubt that Bundles or Mr. Carr did walk back to the Red Roof Hotel with them.
What element of abduction, use of a firearm in the commission of abduction, is missing if we, in fact, assume he said, you're lying about the pimp, so he knows they're over there to discuss the pimp situation. He exhorts the use of the firearm in a violent manner, and then he assists in getting her belongings back to where they are abducting her. I hate to end a sentence in preposition two.
I don't think it's that clear. I think that when they initially come in, you have this argument that primarily is starting between Ms. Scarborough and Mr. McQuitty. That argument is then going to kind of expand, to which Mr. Carr, who's described as being in the back, kind of away from everybody else, is kind of saying you are lying, with no other additional context to that. Then it's ultimately the pistol whip comment. You would suggest, well, okay, his intent is to beat her up, get her to say whatever you want to say, not to deprive her of her liberty, to kidnap her, to take her back to the Red Roof Inn, and to force her to prostitute. Because we very well know that as soon as she got back to the Red Roof Inn, she ultimately decided to leave the Red Roof Inn and even told another member of the group, Country, hey, I'm going. And Country was like, okay.
After all the people who'd come over with the gun and fallen asleep.
Yes, but she deliberately had the ability to leave when she wanted to. So I think when you look at the specific intent that is required for the abduction, what did Mr. Card want to accomplish when he went over there? I don't think it was to abduct her, because Ms. Scarborough had been cooperating with this group for 6 or 7 days willingly. So how do you know we're not going to go over there and she's just going to say, okay, I won't waste my money on the America's Best, I'll just come back to the Red Roof Inn? How can we say that it was a planned abduction before we actually got over to the hotel, when it's clear that things kind of went sideways, or went whatever way they were going to go, once she defied Ray Ray and said, well, I don't want to give you any of my money?
They were living off of her earnings as a prostitute, isn't that right?
No, not necessarily. The money that she was making, she was giving to Justin. She did not know where it was going. There was also testimony that Justin and Ray Ray were both selling drugs, and there was some testimony from Jeff's mother, I believe, that she had given him some money prior to him coming up to the Hampton Roads area. She believed that some of the hotel rooms were being purchased with that money, but there was no clear testimony that her money was directly going to the hands of the clerk, and that's why they were sleeping in those particular rooms. That didn't become clear. I think when you have the conspiracy charge, the Commonwealth was required to show that that was Jeff's state of mind before he went over there. And knowing that Ms. Scarborough had been that willing participant in, you know, this group of wanting to use drugs, wanting to prostitute, that being her lifestyle, you can't say that he went over there saying, well, I want to personally benefit from her prostitution lifestyle. If one thing was clear, it was that Mr. Carr got no money from her. He gave her no drugs. He never posted her on Backpage. He didn't drive her around for the purposes of prostitution. He never forced her to prostitute. He never pointed a gun at her, and he never had any weapons.
But it was her money that paid for the hotel room where he was staying.
I disagree with that. That was never crystal clear. She described in the record, I would give my money to Justin, and then I don't know where that money went. She suspected that, but that was never confirmed. And that's why some defense evidence was presented to show that Jeff did have an alternative source of income in order to pay for rooms if need be. He was also transient, coming in and out, and was not there the entire time. If you read the entire record, the record actually reads the story of Justin McQuitty, Ray Ray, and even Brandon Bethel, who never got charged. But Jeffrey Carr is really a minor player in this offense. I'd like to reserve my remaining time.
Thank you.
Ms. Bourne?
May it please the Court, Rosemary Bourne on behalf of the appellee, the Commonwealth of Virginia. On the conspiracy to commit abduction, I'll start with that. You know, this is a clandestine act. Conspiracy is a clandestine act. And may be proven by circumstantial evidence because of that. And when defendants buy the same, pursue the same object by their acts, a conspiracy can be inferred. And here are the facts that support a conspiracy to commit abduction are that she paid for the hotel room, and that's on page 203 and 204 of the appendix. And of course, the light is viewed most favorable to the Commonwealth here, not most favorable to the defense. He knew she was prostituting before the America's Best hotel room situation even happened. That's on page 205 of the appendix, because she had to ask him to leave the hotel room at one point so that she could have a prostitution appointment. He was driving them around, the whole group, maybe not specifically prostitution appointments, but he went to pick her up, I believe the testimony was, in North Carolina, and drove her back. When he was arrested, he had multiple keys on his person, which there was expert testimony is consistent with sex trafficking. During the confrontation in the America's Best hotel room, they were yelling at her for 10 minutes. He was in the room. This is not a large place. It's a small room. When they walked into the room, McClenny had a gun. He had it at his side. It was not hidden. There was testimony that he had the gun at his side when they walked in the room. Mr. Carr walked in the room with these other defendants, stood in the back, and paced while they yelled at her for 10 minutes, accusing her of prostituting for other people. Then he threatened to pistol whip her. He said something that she testified was a threat, that they exhorted the others to pistol whip her. Thereafter, McClenny threatened that if she did not leave with them, she was going to have to leave in a body bag. And all of this was in front of Mr. Carr. He's in the room when this is happening. There was testimony thereafter that he grabbed the bags. There was some equivocal testimony about who grabbed the bags when they were in the room, but there was testimony that he carried one of the bags. And that's on page 217, 218, and page 314 of the appendix. He walked, they surrounded her when they walked her back to the other hotel. One next to her, some in front, Mr. Carr behind. That's on page 219 to 309 of, 219 of the, and 309 of the appendix. From this evidence, the fact finder could have reasonably inferred that he conspired to abduct her. The conspiracy was proven by their acts while they were in the hotel room. For the same reasons, the evidence was sufficient to prove abduction. He was in the room with the others when, and she was not free to leave. In fact, she said, "I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to work for you anymore." Something along those lines. And they, at that point, threatened her to put her in a body bag if she didn't accompany them back. She was not free to leave. She was detained at that point, and she was transported at that point back to the other hotel room. The evidence was sufficient to prove conspiracy to commit sex trafficking. And I would note here that the only assignment of error in this case addressed his intent. It didn't address whether McQuitty was actually a pimp. The assignment of error only addressed one issue on that charge, and that is whether he had the intent to commit sex trafficking. And of course, under 357.1A, one who encourages another to receive, who receives a benefit from sex trafficking, it's sufficient. And here, he knew she was prostituting. He stayed in a hotel room that was paid with by her funds, so he benefited from that. And he helped others secure her when she left so that she could continue sex trafficking, which she did. The evidence was sufficient to prove sex trafficking, either as a principal in the second degree or in a concert of action. Again, she paid for the hotel room. He violently encouraged them to force her to continue doing sex trafficking by asking them to pistol whip her. And he knew she was prostituting. The evidence was sufficient to prove that he used a firearm in the commission of abduction. The evidence was sufficient to show that he was a principal in the second degree. He knew, or he was present, when McClenny had the firearm. It was openly carried. He indicated his knowledge of the gun when he exhorted McClenny to pistol whip her. And afterwards, when she was threatened with death, he escorted her back to the hotel and carried her bag. So for those reasons, unless the court has further questions for me, I would ask that you affirm.
Thank you. Ms. Paulding, I believe it's 2 minutes and 51 seconds, but if you go three, that's okay.
Thank you. The record shows on page 204 that Mr. Carr was not staying with them continuously throughout the entire 6 days prior to, that Ms. Scarborough talked about him being in and out. And I think that's important, because if he's in and out, does that mean he's there for 20 minutes a day, 2 hours a day? Is he spending every night there? Is he coming over to party and then he's leaving? At the end of the day, there is no question that Mr. Carr was present with this group of individuals, and that Mr. McQuitty and Mr. McClenny, all, and even Mr. Bethel, all had bad intentions regarding the relationship in terms of Ms. Scarborough. But I think I want to, again, go back one more time to the intent, because although the Commonwealth keeps going through the elements of 18.2357.1, can you really cause her to be a prostitute when she wants to be a prostitute? She's been prostituting before she came up to Hampton Roads. She's willingly prostituting before this event occurs at the America's Best Value Inn. And then at the end of the day, she simply doesn't want to give her money to Ray Ray. Ray Ray is not her boyfriend. He's not someone that she appreciates. He's being forceful and he's being violent. We know that she is happy to give her money to someone else. So how is this a situation where they're pimping her and they're trafficking her when she willingly wants to engage in this behavior with everyone except for Ray Ray? And with this, I think, being one of the first times that this statute is being challenged, as I cannot find any case law on it, I think that that's a really important point, is what is the statute designed to do? And can at any time we have a woman who's deciding that she wants to prostitute for her own well-being, which is her own choice, turn around at the end of the day and then say, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. In fact, in the time when she got arrested, she had heroin in her purse, she had drug paraphernalia, and she did not get charged with any of those offenses. So it was an opportunity for her to provide evidence against the others, to avoid being charged on her own, and then to go into a shelter where she received help. It was nothing but beneficial for her. But does that mean that these particular men were trying to traffic her in a way that she wasn't willingly participating in? I think when you look at the evidence of a whole, that
matters.
Well,
even if she wanted to be, then if she wanted to be, your argument is, then they could take advantage of it.
No, I disagree.
Isn't that what you just said?
No. I think that when she said on that one occasion she did not want to give her money to Ray Ray, they brought her back to the Red Roof Inn, and then she voluntarily left. She could have left at any point in time. She had those resources.
She couldn't have left when the gun was at her head, could she?
No, at that moment, no. But that was Mr. McClenney that had that gun, not Mr. Carr, and he was the one that raised it and made those threats.
Doesn't the statute make it a crime to entice, solicit, invite, recruit, encourage, or otherwise cause or attempt to cause a person to violate the prostitution statute?
Yes, it's extremely broad. And I believe that my time is done. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Melick versus the Commonwealth. Oh,